blood on the leaves and blood at the root. Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze. Strange fruit hanging from the poplar tree. Eyes and the twisted mouth, scent of magnolia, sweet and fresh. Then the sudden smell of burning flesh. Here is a fruit for the crow to pluck, for the rain to gather, for the wind to suck, for the sun to rise.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome to the French Connections Tuesday edition. Today's date is the 15th of July, 2008. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith. Again, we're here to share with you all the information we've been able to gather together here in the last couple of weeks. Been about 7 or 8 days since I did the last file, and I hope all of you are staying up on the latest events, especially in the financial markets. You know, I have a resident expert that I bring on regularly to discuss these things, and I consider myself a bit of an expert in my own right here on some of these issues. His name is Mohamed Rafiq. Everyone's familiar with him who's listened to the French Connection. We've been giving updates from time to time based upon our understanding of this crisis, and essentially, the crisis is deepening, of course, and it's starting to look like there are no exits for anyone in this implosion. It looks like it's going to go across the board against the middle class and even upper middle class, and anybody not holding hard assets in the upper class is also going to be hit. But I'm going to bring Mohamed up in a moment here. I do want to make a little caveat statement here on my declaration about Andrew Jackson, the president. Andrew Jackson, of course, did a very good job of fighting off the bad guys by keeping them out of the banking system. But I was reminded after I did the file that Mr. Jackson was also the person who marched the Cherokee Nation into a dismal death march that cost it half of its population. And he gloated that he was successful in doing so. So there's a big duality in this guy, and I thought I'd mention that going in here. I do want to say, though, that he did a very good job of stopping the bankers from getting into America. So maybe he's not quite as white-knighted as I thought he was originally. So, but anyway, that being said, Mohamed, are you with me?
Yes, I am indeed. Good evening, Daryl.
Well, it's nice to have you back, Mohamed. You know, this thing is, as we have talked about already here in this little warm-up we had just a moment ago, it's deepening. It's showing that they can't stop what's going to come. You saw that major bank in America go down, and people actually lining up to try to get money out and can't. We just saw Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae 4.5 trillion in holdings in loan guarantees. Goodness knows how much of that is going to go bad. But if the whole thing starts going bad, that will be really the beginning of the end of everything. I mean, that is a huge, huge amount of money. You have to get that in perspective, I think, Mohamed. The whole entire American economy only produces about $15 trillion a year GDP, and that is every cent exchanged in the nation for everything. So when you take $4.5 trillion in a loss in one fell swoop, and that's just their losses. We're not talking about the rest of the banks, just theirs. We're talking about a full and complete meltdown of the financial system, aren't we?
Well, we've been predicting that's going to happen for some time on
yep.
the basis that it had actually already happened.
That's right.
And that what we've been seeing now, and we've been pointing this out to people repeatedly, is that the people behind the money in our economic systems, the elements run by the government, have been using tax dollars, tax pounds, tax euros to intervene in something which was a fait accompli. It was a done deal. All they've done is buy a bit of extra time and lose a huge amount of money in the process.
Right.
There was also another announcement you may have missed, Darrell. Citigroup have been forced to bring $100 billion of assets back onto their books.
Well, now what the heck were these assets doing off their books?
Well, the way that banks are allowed to account for things is that as long as the situation remains unrealized profits or losses, as known in the business for the mark-to-market loss, as long as it's unrealized, they can say to the Securities and Exchange Commission or the Inland Revenue or the tax authorities, whoever it is that they're reporting into, they can say, oh, we haven't sold it, so although it's marked down at the moment, the price, we haven't actually got a real loss yet. But the reason this $100 billion had to come back onto the trading book is that they'd reached a stage where they had to accept $7 billion in losses on those assets. They were unable to maintain this notional write-down any longer. Mm. The assets, for whatever reason, most likely have gone into default. We don't know much detail about the asset, but my guess is, Darrell, we've been saying to people, these companies, so many corporates out there, are unable to refinance. If they go to the bond market, the cupboard is bare.
Yeah.
And we're looking at bonds now going status default. And this means that they then come back onto the trading book.
Well, what we pointed out too, Mohammed, and it was you that first mentioned this to me, many of these write-ups on these new bonds that were floated last year after the beginning of this implosion, around the end of August into September. And so what we know is that there's a payment date, there's a coupon date, there is a requirement for these people to belly up and pay in September. And what we both know is that in many instances, or if not in all of them, every bank and every financial institution is going to have trouble paying at least a large portion of those obligations they made last year when they did a rewrite of a lot of their debt. So this debt that's coming back onto the books here and for payment is not going to be realized, and there's the real slide, and that's going to come in September. Am I correct in saying so?
Well, but by September, everything that can default will have defaulted, and
yeah,
that's what we're looking at. And as we explained to listeners previously, Darrell, these bonds pay the interest at different stages. Some pay quarterly, some pay every 3 months, some pay every 6 months, and some pay once a year, unlike maybe a bank deposit that may pay you weekly interest or monthly interest. These bonds pay a bit more, but you have to wait a bit longer for it. It's one of these kinds of things. And those bonds, which only pay interest once a year, that were all refinanced just before. If everybody goes and looks at the graphs of when this slide began, it was last October for real and for big.
Yeah.
And people were able to refinance in October, and maybe some even reached in November. But after that, the refinancing window has slowly shrunk, and by the time we got to the end of December last year and January this year, it was completely closed, and it's been completely closed ever since.
Can I tell you something that I reminded the listeners of one other file before, but did you know that Goldman Sachs shorted all the financials back last June, not the June that just passed, a year ago June. In other words, they went out into the marketplace and threw shorts across the board on all the financials. How in the heck did they know in June what was going to happen in September unless they were part of it? Unless they were part of the problem that was on its way coming. And it's interesting to note, of all the financial institutions, Goldman Sachs is the one that's still looking very strong. And I'm sitting here saying to you right now, if they knew 6 months in advance of the major problems, they weren't telling anybody, and they went across their whole industry and put shorts out on everything and cleaned up on everybody's misery.
That sounds about right, Darrell. As I explained to you, I may have mentioned this to publicly before to the listeners, but I've certainly told you that one friend of mine who's a bond dealer at a major European bank told me almost 2 years ago now, Dal, almost 2 years ago, that he was offloading all of the bank's exposure to US subprime mortgage-backed securities because he said this stuff is all going to go.
And who are they? Fishing this out to? Who are they pushing this out on? They were pushing it out on pension funds, weren't they?
Pension funds and retirement funds, endowment policies, annuities, all these kind of policies that are held by the general public, they offloaded them to all those kinds of institutions. What he did not appreciate back then, Darrell, was the term they use in the industry, the contagion, the effect that it would have across the board.
Yeah, yeah.
Because what we're beginning to realize is this isn't just about subprime. This is about lending full stop and ridiculous levels of bank leverage and to the extent that nobody could understand it. It may well be that Goldman, they appreciated the over-leveraged situation and they said this can only result in collapse, which is what we've been saying since December.
So well, actually, we started talking about this the end of October, Mohammed. I got to be honest with you. I pegged this thing in conversations with you in mid-October. By the end of October, I was pretty darn sure we had seen the implosion in September. I knew a big event hit in September, and what took place in October confirmed it for me. And I got to tell you, we were talking about this in mid-October. You can go back and listen to the files.
We were, but there was, I suppose, an element of hope that we had maybe as late as December that Bernanke was not the useless dolt that he is and that he would have an inkling of how to try and correct the situation. Of course, he's demonstrated that he is a complete buffoon.
Well, you think that's true? I don't. I think he's playing off of a playbook. I think that that America has already been thrown to the dogs, and I think that they're looking for a realignment of world's geopolitics, and the way to do that is in an implosion setting. They've done it so many times in the past, Mohammed, that it looks like they're doing it again, and from the ashes and the dust that settles, they're going to emerge as the only winner standing there with everything.
Well, if that were the case, I would agree with that. But as you know, Darrell, I'm very conscious of the fact that they themselves have been very badly burnt. A major Zionist was a 20% shareholder in Bear Stearns. He lost $800 million. A lot of their players are getting burnt. They did not expect the contagion that's gone there, and the fact that only Goldman took that position shows that, you know, in all the marketplace, very few people were expecting that. I know that Rothschild's bank had to pull out of their attempt to purchase ABN AMRO because they found themselves short of cash. The thing about that, as I've explained to the listeners before, Rothschild's own bank, of course, is not a publicly quoted company. It's not even a limited liability company.
Sorry.
It's a sole trading institution, which means that he doesn't have to post accounts anywhere in the world. So we don't really know what's going on in that company.
But I do know of all the French banks, BNP Paribas, which is the Rothschilds' commercial arm here, has the least problems of any. They've only owned up to $3 billion in losses. But comparing those to other banks, that's a pittance. We've also seen Goldman Sachs, which is their American arm in the trading area. They've already got the stuff in advance. Seems to me that they knew what was happening long before, and all of their major institutions have only taken little grazing blows. And they're going to be left standing with everything, I think.
Well, no, there are some other institutions which they don't have influence on that are still doing very well and have had very little damage done. The Japanese banks, as we've discussed before, the Chinese banks, probably the two banks which have come out of it with the least problems of all, far better position than any banks that are emerging now, are Deutsche Bank and Rabobank. These banks, one of them is a cooperative bank, Rabobank, owned by the Dutch Farmers Union. and because of their very conservative approach, they don't have any major losses. And Deutsche Bank spent a fortune on risk management systems in the late 90s, and as a result, they're also coming out of it clean. So they won't be the only ones holding the folding at the end of it, definitely.
Yeah,
not.
Well, how about the contagion in just business activity affecting all of your clients? Let's say Rabobank has got a client base of 100,000 clients, and of that, 60% of them are going to get whacked some way, some of them terribly so, in this implosion, in this problem. There's not going to be a single bank in the world or any business in the world unscathed in what's coming. I don't even see some currencies surviving. I think the dollar is toast. And of course, there was, according to what I'm reading on the internet, and I've yet to confirm its veracity, that the Congress was brought together in a closed door session and told that America would be in martial law by the end of 2008. And that its financial system would completely collapse in 2009, and that there would be rioting in the streets and a roundup of dissident citizens. And this was explained to the American congressman in a closed door session on March 13th of this year.
Well, I can easily believe that, Darrell. As I said, as an outside observer of America, we've been witnessing things which, as I put in the email, were in all but name martial law, and the giving of military sniper rifles to the ordinary police, a level of weaponry that's just, you know, for helping, or you're getting cats out of trees, and, you know, it just defies belief. They might as well give them shoulder-launched missiles. They're just,
we don't know that they haven't.
Well, that's true. I mean, it would just be so bizarre to give them that. And then, of course, George Bush the other week signed a declaration stating that the Korean nuclear weapon position was such that he was invoking his right to put domestic powers in place that effectively give him power of martial law, claiming some kind of an emergency. That was done very, very quietly. Hardly anybody's reported it, and yet I read it very clearly on the internet that he'd gone ahead and done it.
Yes, it has been done, and that I have confirmed that. Mohammed, we're in some of the most awful situations I have ever read about. If I were reading this as a historic event and it's happening in real time, I would be reading the implosion and destruction of many societies, countless millions of human beings, tens of thousands of businesses, and all kinds of freedoms and liberties evaporating before my eyes. This sounds like a period of history unlike any we've had in the last couple of hundred years, possibly longer.
Well, hopefully we will be forewarned on this occasion. My view is very similar to yours, Darrell. Maybe the only difference is I see these criminals now as opportunists in this environment, looking at how they can, as buzzards, best scavenge the dead which will be left there, because they themselves are realizing that even amongst themselves they will be dead. This is an inevitability, as we said in December last year, when Bernanke made all the wrong moves with the interest rates and failed to kickstart the economy by giving confidence into the retail sectors and retail spending. When he actually failed at that point in time, which was mind-numbing, really, the way that he destroyed the December Christmas sales season.
Yeah.
Which, of course, became a contagion globally. It affected sales all around the world, and therefore, obviously, production, etc., etc. So we had all of that collapse on that side, on top of the financial meltdown which has been going on.
Well, I've got to tell you, we're in a literal panic in here in France. If there isn't a single person you run into that. I mean, I know a lot of people, and every one of them, the first thing out of their mouths is how desperate the economy is and their financial system looks, and you could see on their faces. I went shopping this morning to pick up a few things at the grocery store, and I'm looking at people shaking their head as they look at prices. They're looking at each other, and you can see just people shaking their head no as they're looking at things. And I'm watching meat prices up 30% and biscuit prices and bread prices, and it's amazing. And then when you get to the gas pump, it's a real shocker. I don't know what it's like in Britain, but I know your housing market's taken almost the same turn as the American market did earlier in the last year. You're right behind them almost step for step, and the French are not far behind that. And this is a global thing we're watching, isn't it?
Absolutely, Daryl. We are, I think, 8 to 12 months behind the U.S. property collapse. It is starting to bite in here. As I'm walking round the streets of London these days, I'm seeing many more, not so much the high streets, but off the high streets, many more small shops, you know, corner shops, all up to let, small garages having closed down, small businesses left, right and centre closing down, Daryl, over here. And all of this obviously will ultimately have the knock-on effect because those people aren't spending and so on. So we understand the fact that once these businesses close, all the support and ancillary economy that thrives off those businesses also closes. So it's happening here. We are maybe 8 to 12 months away from a very serious housing problem here, which of course is going to trash all the bonds which are UK mortgage-backed bonds. We haven't seen much default there yet, Daryl, but those defaults are on their way.
Well, we've got a couple of new Northern Rocks we're waiting in the wings to just blow. I'm sure of it.
I think we've got some things which are going to be far bigger than that, Daryl. They're talking about, you know, multiple bank failure in the States now, maybe several dozen, maybe hundreds. What we have maintained all the way down the line is that the minimum scenario is that one major bank in each area, one major bank in each area must fail. That's the minimum scenario, and the most likely scenario, in my personal opinion, is that we'll only be left with one major bank in each area, maybe two, but actually everything's going to fall by the wayside, and we're looking at last man standing, Daryl. I really believe that.
You know, we were talking earlier too. I talked to you earlier about the gold, and you made a trip to the Near East here, and you know, the supply of physical gold for delivery was in short supply. So rather than wait for the next delivery, people were bidding up the price, weren't they?
Well, the people were actually standing in queues. Literally, this was in the airport in Dubai, in the duty-free area, Daryl.
Yeah.
And I've been there on many occasions before now, having business activity out there. And I have never seen a scene like the scene I saw this week.
A lot of Indians, you told me, huh?
Yeah, a lot of people from maybe India or maybe Pakistani background. India, of course, being the world's prime consumer of gold. And they were sometimes two or three people deep at a counter. And to understand, this shop was in the center of the airport lounge area. And it's like circular in shape and maybe 15 to 20 meters, or certainly 15 meters in diameter. And there were two to three people deep, and they were all just trying to get hold of gold because they all know that the dollar's going down the pan, sterling's going down the pan, the euro's going down. All these fiat currencies are going down the pan, and the value of gold was going up so high that 24 carat gold was being sold on the ounce. Machined, admittedly, but sold on the gram, at $133 per gram.
That is $3,000 an ounce.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they're still making deliveries in the United States 3 day, like I told you earlier, at around I think today's delivery price was around $1,000 for just raw, and for maple leaves and eagles was a little bit more than that. I think it was, well, like 10:30 or 10:33, and it's a 3 day delivery. But that's not guaranteeing that they're not going to come knocking on your door to take it back from you, is it? We've got a gold confiscation rule in the United States that's still enforced from 1933.
I'm not too sure about the laws in the States. I doubt your knowledge on that one, Darrell. But what I would say is that under George Bush's new emergency laws, thanks to North Korea, they can turn up and take your kids and your vegetables. So, you don't need a 1933 law. We've got a 2008 law that if they walk up and say, give us your shoes and socks, you don't really have any choice.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't want to be the bearer here of all bad news, but there's a groundswell happening here, and what I'm finding out more and more is people are feeling willing to blame Zionist Judaism for the crimes. They're not fearing the title anti-Semite, which you and I both know neither of us are anti-Semitic. I'm the farthest thing from that. I'm anti-criminal, as you are. And the simple fact is, Muhammad, fewer people are fearing that the slanderous anti-Semitic moniker that they try to paste upon you, you know. And I see that as a hopeful sign that at some point maybe there'll be a groundswell of knowledge here. Now, our numbers here at the French Connection are up, and they're up considerably. They're up around 14,000 people a day. Now, this is at a considerable number of visits per day, and the truth is that people are looking for answers, and we've had them from the beginning. I've had the answers. The correct research has been done here already. What I need to understand here is how can we make this go larger? I have to say one thing. The donations to the French Connection have all but stopped, and I don't understand why. Nobody seems to think that we don't need the help, but we certainly do. Part of what keeps me held back is the fact that I can't make ends meet to keep the story going. You know, I got to tell you, but that's a sidebar issue. One thing I do know is that based upon the numbers, people are searching for answers, Muhammad. I'm wondering if we're going to be able to get the right information into these people's minds soon enough. I told you, remember when I told you Alex Jones was being forced to tell the truth?
Indeed, yes.
He stopped doing it. He did it for 2 days. He told the real story, and then he went right back to his old lie machine, New World Order nonsense, and has stopped, 100% stopped, naming the Zionist criminals as the guys behind it. I also saw Jeff Rentz's website start putting a lot more Bigfoot stuff up there. He's putting on, in the same thread with the real news, he's putting... The Bigfoot picture is found to be real. What else has he got? Bigfoot seen by three witnesses. And then on that same thread, he's got all kinds of UFO sighting stuff all over the place. In other words, he's ratcheted up the nonsense on his website as a means of discrediting the facts and the truth. Because I told you before, he was one of the people that had honest information mixed with garbage. And you know as well as I do, that is a disinformation tactic that these criminals use to make everybody think that we're all kooky.
Well, of course, Darrell, I've told you on many occasions that I've actually seen Bigfoot land UFOs in my garden. So I think that also one of the other things I've noticed occur on the Rent site is he's got quite a few anti-Islamic things that he's slipping in now and again.
That
has
just started, and you know that he didn't have that stuff before, and now he's got the audience that goes there, and he's slipping that in almost every other thing. He's got a new anti-Islam thing. You're right.
Yeah, so that's another vein that he's recently started. One thing about the anti-Semitic thing, of course, Darrell, is that we have your efforts to thank for that on the French Connection. It's something which, as I explained to you when I first came on your show of 3 and a bit years ago, whatever it is now, that historically this was a label that they put on people to stop this research into the truth and to frighten people away and to discredit them. And you went through the research and you explained to people very clearly as you went along the things that you'd been discovering and had been finding out, put everything forward clearly, concisely, so that people understood the arguments. If you saw something that somebody said to you that one day seemed sensible, but on reflection, when you were listening back to your own show, you thought it was incorrect, you'd come back and make a correction. Many thousands of people have grown with you through that process, Darrell, and they all understand what the reality is at the French Connection. It's a very, very good information source, and the people who've been listening here are remarkably well informed.
Yeah.
We have some very interesting, I've got some very interesting little anecdote for you and the listeners. Some of the guys who've been listening to us, encouraging everybody out there to go and strike conversations with people. Maybe people feel a bit nervous about that.
Yeah.
But we've had some very interesting developments in the UK where a couple of friends of mine here who've been meeting in their town outside the front of the library and just having conversations at the front of the library steps. It started just, you know, engaging two or three people in conversation. Apparently, the swell now with people of all ages and backgrounds has become so large, stood outside discussing things on the French Connection and discussing Zionists taking over the world and Zionists poisoning the food supply and poisoning people, etc. They've become so numerous at the front of the library that the security have actually turned up to try and find out what's going on and discovered that there's this gaggle of a few dozen conspiracy theorists swapping new information. All started from two people just trying to engage a couple of friends, and it's swelling. And also growing with that is, obviously, as people become informed, Darrell, there's a lot of anger there and resentment because people are realizing exactly what these people have got away with for so long.
Well, you know, Islam, and we have to be honest here about early on, and I remember when I was over in Britain about 3 years ago, and I was talking to some people about, you know, the fact that Islam was not involved in 9/11, but there were still people there that were lauding the achievements of Osama bin Laden. And at the time, these were very forthright, righteous people who were very badly misinformed from the Muslim community. And of course, many people were in that condition, thinking that Osama bin Laden was a hero. And what they didn't understand was the bin Laden relationship to the Bush family, the bin Laden racial history being rooted in Judaism, their connections to the criminal Saud family and the rest of it. And now that truth has come out, you don't hear people holding Osama bin Laden up as a hero anymore. What you have them talking about is him being used to get the Christian world against Islam. And that's exactly what he was used for. And of course, everyone knows he's been dead since 2001 at the end of the year. So my point being is that there has been a learning process even in that area.
Indeed, Dal, sadly, and I know from bitter personal experience, many members of the Muslim community, the majority, did put faith in the mainstream media.
Yeah.
And did not rely enough on research from inside the Muslim community. I myself, and of course you've had other people on here from the Muslim community as well, who've strived over time, over the decades, to try and inform people in the Muslim community of things which were more realistic in respect of history and political history and monetary history, and it was very, very hard work. The irony is that they're now looking at leads taken by people such as yourself and saying, hold on a minute, we've got a guy here, he's not a Muslim, and he's got all these facts and all this information, and we're looking at it, and it all stacks up. I suppose they're feeling a little bit of embarrassment there to some degree, but that's not important. What's important is that they've moved on, they're being critical of the mainstream sources themselves, and are looking for alternative sources and realizing that places like the French Connection can give them information that really they should have had anyway as Muslims, but now at least they've got access to it, they've got the opportunity to educate themselves and educate other Muslims around them, and that is definitely happening.
Well, you know, one of the other things I want to bring up is a site that does a very, very good job of informing us about the gold markets, and that is a site called the JS Mindset, a guy named Jim Sinclair. At least that's his pseudonym, his pen name. The fact is that my research, well, it's not my research, but one of my listeners has informed me some time ago that his name is Seligman, and he happens to be, of course, a Jewish trader. That in itself is not a guilty verdict on this guy, but what is a guilty verdict is that he's pushing the sinister nature of the Pakistani government here, and saying Pakistan is the country that's behind all these problems, and Pakistan's the country that we need to start war footing with. And of course, he's ramping up the evil Pakistanis, and of course, you and I know that Pakistan's leadership is bought and paid for. But Pakistan and its citizens are either badly informed or under a terrible duress, and that they don't have anything to do with any of these problems. So again, what we see is the vilification by this man of Islam. And I'm not in support or in condemnation of Islam. What I'm trying to point out here is that these sites that many people find great truth in are also big purveyors of nonsense.
Well, they're trying to stick the blame on somebody else, aren't they? And the way they do that, Daryl, is simply to put a certain amount of fact in there, and then afterwards, you know, once they've got people hooked on that bit of a bait, they then do a switch right at the end and try and send them off in the wrong direction, whether it's looking for neocons, whether it's looking for bin Laden, whether it's looking for Al-Qaeda, whether it's looking for Pakistanis. It really doesn't matter. It's any red herring. Every single one of them is a red herring.
Okay.
Were there any, we ask ourselves, you know, were there any Pakistanis dressed as Arabs on September the 11th jumping up and down as planes collided in with the towers and claiming afterwards they were there to document the event?
Well, was Silverstein a Pakistani?
It's very clear, you know, the amount of evidence that you have done such a good job on that now that we don't need to repeat here. The amount of evidence is overwhelming that A, the official story is wrong, and B, the Zionist Israelis were involved. And they were doing a false flag. A false flag is where we put somebody else's name on it. They dressed up as Arabs. They were caught with Arab headdresses and Arab clothing.
And you know what they were declaring to the police? The police wrote it in their report. We're not your enemy. We're not your enemy. It's the Islamists that are your enemy. We're Jewish, they said. That's what they told the Hoboken police or East Rutherford police. I got to get my facts straight on that. Maybe somebody will email me. But they told the police that we're not your problem. We're not the ones you need to be looking for. The ones you need to look for are Islamists and Muslims.
Yeah. We're not the problem. You need to just be looking for people who are dressed similarly to us. because they were wearing Islamist clothing. So, you know, for people that they're saying are this big enemy to the world, it is a bit odd that they chose to dress up like them. It's so glaringly obvious, isn't it, Daryl? And it's very sad that we're in a situation, and we hope that the listeners out there to the French Connection are already very alert, very switched on. They've got the sniffer's nose now, and they can see these things. What we need them to do, Daryl, is now to take those skills on to other people and just keep it spreading, because that we're going to hit that critical mass. We're going to get there.
Well, I see that happening, and I'm wondering, you know, one of the groups that I've tried to get people to try and bring on into the fold are the smaller police departments, and you've got smaller police departments in some of the hamlets of Britain that, you know, where the relationship to the public is much more relaxed They're much more approachable. They feel less threatened by their surroundings. They've not been infiltrated by a propaganda of terrorism everywhere under every rock. And these are the police departments that need to be brought up to speed, however you do it. I mean, if it's with anonymous letters or sending them a video that's anonymous or whatever, but they need to be brought up to speed, because if rural America and many parts of America are still very rural, and many parts of Britain and France, and the police departments in these areas are informed correctly, you know, we may have more allies within the police force structure than we know. I mean, these people have children and themselves. They're married, too. They've got mortgages as well. Each and every one of these people are family people. And, you know, they're much more approachable in the small communities, Mohammed. And I think, you know, bringing them on board is a priority one for us.
I think bringing as many people as we can in all walks of life. I think people in the emergency services and the intelligence services are obviously paramount, because they have even more information than we do. You know, we had this situation, haven't we, recently, Darrell, here in the UK, where we've had three very senior police officers this year all go out walking or skateboarding and then slipping on a bar of soap in the street or something and breaking their necks or falling off a cliff, or just, you know, they've obviously been murdered. And what we have is other members of the police services must be looking at this and saying, who's killing us? Who's killing off our senior policemen? What's going on here? They must be asking these questions themselves.
Well, you know, I've got a lot of hits coming out of Langley, Virginia, and the ISPs in the Langley, Virginia region. And there's no doubt in my mind. In fact, the number one area of hits for me is where Langley, Virginia sits. That's where I have a map on my statistics that tells me where people are listening in from or coming on board from. And that is the number one area. So there are CIA people who are in the know and that are spending a lot of time listening to the French Connections discussions here. And I'm wondering, you know, are they doing it as a countermeasure to me, or are they doing it as a way to inform themselves? I hope it's the latter, you know.
Well, I think the irony of the nature of the material that we have, Darrell, is very difficult for people trying to run counter operations, because they can bring in any knucklehead, meathead, redneck into the CIA, not even the intelligent ones, but people right at the very bottom of the food chain. And when they listen to the material, short of them having only one brain cell, they're going to start questioning what's going on. And of course, there are a lot of fiercely intelligent people in those services. And there are some who do join for patriotic, genuinely patriotic reasons.
Yeah.
Maybe service for defense of nation and family. And while they're probably keeping it to themselves, they're very, very, very acutely aware of what the reality is, and they didn't know before. So this is one of the dangers of the overall handlers in the intelligence services, is that it's, well, we can't send more people over to look at Darrell's website, because he's getting more and more converts, and we've got less and less loyalty within our own organization to blind obedience, and people actually showing loyalty to the Constitution, to the American way of life, to family values, to all the things that we're saying we want people to have.
Yeah. Well, you know, all of those things have... I've never seen an erosion in the moral compass of the world like I've seen of late. And I got to be honest with you, you know, the television set before, we had trouble even getting out of our contract. Believe it or not, the